is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back for the second hour of Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thanks again to Mr. Crow for joining us for the first hour. Right now, we've got Andrew Bernarski on the line with us, and he's at a metal concert, I think he just said. Megadeth, is that where you're at, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm kicking it with this Swedish rock and roll girl. It's called Meldrum.
Awesome.
Backstage at the Megadeth show in San Bernardino. It's about to go off in a little bit.
Well, we'll talk.
Walk outside so that we can talk to the audience for a little while, and then I'll probably walk in and let them hear a little Megadeth from the stage.
Awesome. Well, Andrew is the star of the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's also starring in the prequel to that movie, which is Texas Chainsaw Massacre: The Beginning, which is coming out nationwide October 6th. He's also been in tons of other movies. You've seen him in movies like Pearl Harbor, Tim Burton's Batman Returns, Oliver Stone's Any Given Sunday. He was in Rollerball, Scooby-Doo, Street Fighter, The Program, and Higher Learning, John Singleton's movie. Let's talk a little bit about
now
the new...
I'm here with Jasmine St. Clair.
Oh, awesome.
Hey.
Very cool.
Station doing a Leatherface interview. Hello.
Now,
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you? Now, Andrew, tell us a little bit about the new prequel movie, I should say. This is taking place. This is going to set up the history of Leatherface and the crazy family, right?
Yes, it is. We got Jasmine St. Clair, you know, Leatherface. How are you doing?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Somebody's out there laughing. Don't worry. We got Jasmine St. Clair in the background yelling, Leatherface, woo woo.
That's right.
That's how I always imagined it would be.
So now, the prequel is going to tell us the history about Leatherface and the family, right?
It's great. It's an origin story about the humble and the not so humble beginnings of Leatherface and how Thomas Hewitt becomes a
serial killer? Right.
Yeah, a predator rather than a victim.
Now, are we going to actually get to see you this time, Andrew, or is it going to be hidden behind the mask the whole time?
Well, it's a really cool look for the character this time because he hasn't started wearing leather faces. In the beginning, he's been wearing more like a surgeon's mask.
No,
he's holding his nose on because it's rotting away. And then I start skinning people's faces to be prettier and for that satisfaction that it brings. Twisted psychology of Leatherface.
Very cool. Now, are you signed on to do another Texas Chainsaw movie, or is this the last one that you're planning on working on?
I think we'll probably do a few more. When we did the remake, it was told there was 33 victims found in the Hewitt household, and we only showed like 5 or 6 of them last time.
Sure.
And now we're doing a radio interview on the air, Dougie. Thanks. Yeah.
Awesome.
Excuse me, we have a lot of people here at the rock show.
That's right.
Those opinions do not necessarily, or not necessarily reflect those of the Fisher New Line Studio.
That's right. So now let's talk a little bit. Now, like I said, you've done tons of other movies, and you've been you always seem to be kind of the jock guy in a lot of the movies as well. Like you've done Any Given Sunday and The Program and things like that, correct? Oh, Andrew, are you with us? Well, I guess not. Seems we lost Andrew at the Megadeth concert. Your signal will eventually drop out on you. Well,
anyway, Jasmine St. Clair's fault.
That's right. Now, Andrew will be joining us in Minneapolis next weekend. He's going to be here at Crypticon Minneapolis. And if you're interested in more about Crypticon, you can check out the website, which is CRYPTICON. Minneapolis.com. There's all kinds of guests that are going to be there. We have Sid Haig from Devil's Rejects. You know him as Captain Spaulding. He's also in the remake. They're doing a new Night of the Living Dead movie, Tim, and it's a 3D version of the movie, and Sid Haig is going to be starring in that.
Oh, wow.
Bill Moseley, who is going to be our next guest. We'll be getting in touch with him in a few minutes and bringing him on the air. He's going to be there as well, and Bill Moseley is Otis from the movies Devil's Reject and House of a Thousand Corpses. He's also was in the remake of Night of the Living Dead as well. He played Johnny, the brother at the beginning of the movie that's heckling his sister, "They're coming to get you, Barbara."
Oh, yeah.
So he was in that, and he's been in a ton of movies. He was also one of my all-time favorite characters, since we were just talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. For any of you that were a fan of the movie Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original, they came out with a sequel, which is kind of campy fun. As a matter of fact, on the website at our site at darknessradio.com/shows, I put up the posters. I thought it was hilarious. It's a poster for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and it looks exactly the exact same pose as The Breakfast Club. And it's
really?
Got, yeah, Leatherface has got the fist up like Judd Nelson, and, you know, in Breakfast Club, they've got, what's the redhead's name from... Molly Ringwald is laying across, and they've got that creepy old grandfather laying across the bottom and Chop Top. But Chop Top's the one that gets hit in the head with the, I think it was an axe, and he's got the metal plate there, and he keeps scratching at it with a coat hanger and a lighter.
Yep.
So, great character. Really nice guy. He's going to be with us. But you've got John A. Russo, who helped co-write the movie Night of the Living Dead. Kira Schoen, who was a little girl in Night of the Living Dead. Sounds like a Night of the Living Dead and House of a Thousand Corpses kind of deal going on. But we also have Andrew Benarski that Tim and I are hosting in from Darkness Radio. He'll be there to take part in the event and actually sign autographs as long as he can hear after the Megadeth concert.
Maybe he can take us to a metal show, too. And
that'd
we can,
be awesome.
We can meet a bunch of people.
And, yeah, if you want any more information about that, it's at Crypticon Minneapolis. That's CrypticonMinneapolis.com for all the backstage information about all the great celebrities that are going to be there. Priscilla Barnes is going to be there, Tim. She played Terry on Three's Company, which is scary enough, but then she was also in The Devil's Rejects.
Do you think if we could get her in front of a medium, we could make contact with Don Knotts?
Or John Ritter.
Hey.
Very interesting. We should actually do that and see if we can make any kind of connections here in the future. I'll tell you what, we're going to get Bill Moseley on the line here. We will be back with you right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show.
The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because... in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
If you, read Taps Paramag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could I go to work because Bigfoot stole my car?
And creepy.
Ghosts, goblins, witches, creatures of the night. Yep, that just about covers everybody Dave and Tim have ever dated. Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. During the commercial break, we were actually able to reestablish a connection with our guest, Andrew Benarski. Let's see if Andrew's still there at the Megadeth concert. Andrew, are you there?
I am. I love that promo you just played, Dave. That was having cracking up.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for coming back.
I was digging it, you know, because I'm a fan of that stuff anyway, and that was a heck of a punchline.
Well, thank you very much.
Everybody who ever dated ghosts and goblins and creatures of the night,
hey, don't pick on us, man. That's all we can get out here.
What's up, Minneapolis?
Now, Andrew, we just told you you're going to be out here next weekend for Crypticon.
That's what I'm talking about. I can't wait.
Yep, sitting right next to our table.
To be with you know, a lot of other cool guests, and it's always a party when the cast of the Devil's Rejects comes to town. They're amazing.
Yeah, no doubt. But I think everybody's going to be coming to see you. They've all seen, these guys seem to be at every place I go, the Bill Moseley.
I'm cool too, man.
Yeah,
so
very
I'm ready to hit Minneapolis. I've never been, and, you know, I'm ready to see the at least one of the beautiful Twin Cities.
That's right. Well, let's talk a little bit real quickly, Andrew, if we can talk. I know before we got on air, we were discussing earlier this week that you've actually had a couple of ghost experiences yourself, and I know the listeners would love to hear a little bit about them. Would you mind sharing a story or two with us?
Yeah, straight up. So,
okay.
I'm from Pennsylvania, and there's stuff around from the Revolutionary War. And, you know, when you trail ride through the woods, like I do when I was young with my mom and stuff, you see all kinds of things, you know, like ammunition depots and little large stone, you know, buildings that people, you know, try to survive winters in that are still sitting there, you know, 200 years later in the middle of the woods because they haven't developed it yet and the deer run through them. And it's pretty neat, you know. And on that line, a friend of mine lived in this old stone house from the late 1700s in Pennsylvania. And it was a creepy house in the middle of nowhere and dark as night anyway. And in the daytime, it was, you could feel it had enough character of ghosts anyway. But I spent the night, one night there in the guest bedroom. And right in front of my eyes, like in The Exorcist, the crucifix on the wall turns upside down. And I just feel it. And I'd already been told. I said, I don't know. It looks like there's ghosts in that room. And one of my best friends is really straight up. He says, oh, yeah. He says, you don't even know. That's the room where the ghost is, too. He goes, but he doesn't like girls. But, I mean, sometimes he likes you and sometimes he doesn't. He goes, my brother's fiance was there one day, and she was facing the closet against the wall, and he was looking the other way. She goes, right in front of her eyes, all the clothes on the rack just went on the hangers, right to the other side of the rack, right in front of her.
Wow.
And she said something to his brother. He goes, oh, yeah, we have ghosts in the house. And she fled the room screaming. And he told me that before I slept in the room. And I go, that's all right. I'm going to go in there anyway. And I was tough and young. And I was
sure.
Like, you know, fine. I thought I'd welcome them all in, you know what I mean? Because they wouldn't mess with me, you know? I just meet some ghosts. Figure them out.
That's right.
And have an experience. And so I was laying there in bed, just like staring with my eyes open. And I was just like, you know, it's like waiting in the ocean for a shark to come and bite you on the leg when you can see at the bottom of the water, you know. And
sure.
It was all of a sudden the crucifix just went. And I was like, oh, hell no. I was like, oh, it's not going to hurt me. I was like, oh, and I went and I told him, and he's like, oh, it won't bother you. And another story from that house is, that his mother was doing the Christmas stuff, and the Christmas lights kept getting unplugged in the same house. And she went and she looked at the plug, and she was like, you know, stop. She's talking to the ghost because she talked to the ghost, and she, you know, it was part of her house. She wasn't leaving. And she was like, yelling at the ghost, like, stop unplugging the lights. And she plugged it in again, and before she could walk away, the plug came out of the wall, and she looked at the plug and stuff and followed the cord, and the cord was frayed, and it was sitting frayed right by a bunch of, like, tinsel and stuff.
Wow, that's creepy.
So he said that, you know, his mom, you know, straight up believed that it was, you know, trying to prevent something from happening to her and the house.
Wow. Very cool.
So
now, you also,
neat.
You were lucky enough to actually see a UFO or what you believe to be a UFO as well.
Until they beat me up and anal probe me like
that's
they do in the X-Files. Until they get my number and I find out there's a little chip in the back of my ear or something.
Well, that's just,
come back.
That's just so you can hear our radio show better.
Oh, my God. Is that what's happening?
Exactly.
I thought it was coming in on my molars.
No.
Okay, so here's what happened with the UFO. And the UFO is an unidentified flying object, so I saw something that, you know, I cannot identify except for the experience. It was certainly flying. And my friend was there with me. We were driving with T-tops on my, like, 1990 Ford Thunderbird with the supercharger. It was, like, 1993, and I got a speeding ticket on my Ninja coming back from San Francisco doing about 200 miles an hour because I was... I used to roll that fast, and I was pretty much of a maniac when I was a kid. They tracked me down with an airplane, and I got, you know, in some trouble, and I had to go make a court appearance in the morning at, like, 250 miles outside of L.A., halfway to San Francisco, which is nothing but desert, kind of Bakersfield stuff.
Sure.
Have you ever heard that Dwight Yoakam song, you know, you can't judge me, and you don't know me until you walked on the streets of Bakersfield.
That's right.
Desolate. you know, nothing but cows and the moon and whippoorwinds and, you know, tumbleweeds. So really boring. And we're driving in the darkness of night all through the morning to be, you know, hours away early in the morning. And we had the T-tops off, and it was hot. It was in the summer. And I'm just driving, and we had just, you know, partaked in a bit of a midnight smoke. It was about 2 in the morning, and we're driving. Not to condone any of that stuff, but I was young, crazy, like I said. And
midnight smoke, would that have been like a pack of Lucky Strikes or something?
Similar. There was not a filter on the brand I was smoking.
No, and you hand-rolled them yourself, I'm guessing.
And it was nice, you know, but it couldn't have altered the experience that I saw.
Okay.
All the same, because out of the corner of my eye, in this really dry, still heat, in this quiet night with the rock and roll blaring, I heard, I mean, I didn't hear anything. It caught my eye out of the corner of my eye that there was these three, I'll just say, white orbs. And they caught my attention because I had no idea what they could be. And they were pretty high up, and they weren't really close to us. They were probably, if I had to guess, they were like, you know, 3 miles away in the sky and pretty high. And what it looked like was something was on a tether, like or magnetized to a point on the Earth. And these things were just kind of rotating in the same orbit, which looked to be fixed to a point on the ground. And so I was looking at these things, and I go, you know, what the hell is that? But I wasn't alarmed, or I didn't say that's a spaceship. I never believed in the Roswell. I mean, it makes non-believable TV show, and I can't certify that none of these people I don't know are insane when they tell stories like this. I love Close Encounters, so that's Steven Spielberg.
That's right.
And I've heard a lot of stuff over the years, though, that really intrigued me. But you don't know till you know. And what I know is I'm watching these things, and I get my friend who I played football with in college, I hit him on the shoulder, and he was coming with me riding shotgun. I go, check that out. I go, you know, what the hell is that? And he goes, you know, I don't know. And I go, look at it, though. I was really looking at it. It's weird. What do you think it's doing? And then a second later, these things went one after another, file laterally, probably 50 miles away, and stopped dead. And I just looked at him, and he's looking at me already, and he's like, well, I said, what is that? I go, bro, see, nothing moves like that, bro. I go, no way. I go, I hope it doesn't turn on the tractor beam, bro, and the motor stall out. And we watched it again, and it went back to this, over to this other area. It was like, but it wasn't circling anymore. It did a triangle. It went, and then it went this other place. And then we're like, holy shit, bro. I was like,
no, that's
ridiculous.
Fine. No.
And, oh, I'm sorry. And then it went, and then it just disappeared like this hyper warp, like Star Wars speed. Like,
sure.
It's gone. See you later. Like went to the, like, you know, it warped or something. It just went to the end of the horizon so fast, and it was gone.
You know why it took off so quick?
Here's what we know. I go, it's like fireworks. I go, that's it's flying, and if you don't know what it is, it's absolutely unidentified. And I guess we're not going to tell everybody about this so they don't come with the 40 suits and lock us in the rubber room. And he's like, right on, bro. He goes, I said, we're in agreement with that because that's an easy degree on, right?
Right.
We just seen UFOs, bro, because they're unidentifiable. They're flying, bro. And, whoa.
You know why they took off so quick? You know why they took off so quick?
Because they know the future and knew I'd be Leatherface, and they could see they'd be scared.
No, they knew you were Bogart and the Jay.
Yeah.
See, you weren't sharing, man. You should have been offering the smoke to the aliens. They like a little heat, too, I think.
Oh, God, my God.
Always pass it on the left-hand side to our alien brothers.
That's right.
Well, what happened was that smoke was drifted up there, and they took off because, you know, it was like a heavy metal movie cartoon where they're in the big spaceship.
Very cool. So now you've got the Leatherface movie coming out October 6th, and that's
the
prequel.
I'm watching bats fly over my head, man. That's creepy.
What other movies have you got working on right now, Andrew? Is there anything else in the pipeline for you?
I've got a movie coming out on DVD that I produced called The Curse of El Charro, which is coming out the day before the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So you can go rent a cool slasher flick with a great story. That stars Tabitha Stevens. She's a fabulous actress. Everybody knows from the Howard Stern Show.
Cool.
Right? Oh, sorry to say that. But everybody loves Howard, right?
No, I'm not. You know, we all know that he exists. So.
We love Howard, too.
That's right.
Right on. If he was trying to live it down, he did it all wrong.
That's right.
So, and same with Tabitha, because she's good. And Lemmy from Motorhead is in the movie, and, you know, I made that happen because that was my pleasure. I always thought he could be creepy doing a monologue, you know, like
sure.
Edgar Allan Poe, Motorhead style, looking like he does. And, yeah, we did that just that. And then he does this whole woe to the web, the killer, and strikes, and or whatever he says. And, I come in and it cuts right to me in action, and what a way to be set up, you know.
And, no doubt. And the name of that movie is what now?
The Curse of El Charro. It also stars, speaking of creepy, Calico Cooper, Alice Cooper's daughter.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So you've got the. Now, is that a movie you wrote and produced yourself?
It's a movie that I produced. I executive produced the film.
Okay.
I worked with a bunch of independent filmmakers at a place called Pretty Dangerous Films. Two brothers out of Nashville, Tennessee, rock musicians, their company, and very creative, and some good reviews off and on tonight, too. So, I got two great movies coming out in October.
So that's coming out October 5th, and then nationwide you can go out and see it.
I think October 4th is the release date for Texas Chainsaw. It may have changed it back to the 6th, but...
Oh, okay.
We'll see.
So it's between the 4th and the 6th.
Sure.
Okay,
between the 4th and the 6th, and El Charro comes out on the 3rd, The Curse of El Charro.
So did you figure out a way to get the hot Jessica Biel back in the prequel?
No, but I call Jessica Biel sometimes because she's so hot.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
She's a real deal Biel. That's what I dubbed her after spending some time in her presence and her company. She's an amazing woman. And I agree with Esquire magazine. She's probably... definitely one of the most beautiful women on the planet.
Very cool. What out of all the movies you've done so far, which ones have you liked doing the best? Are you liking the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies the best?
It's a great ride, this one, you know, and I always grew up on Boris Karloff and Lon Chaney Jr. and Sr., you know. I was ready to cut the barbs off fish hooks and put little pieces of sponge in there to run them up, try to cover the leader on the inside of my nose and put makeup and grease paint. And I was all trying to be these guys along with Kiss. So
oh, sure.
I'm like the bastard creature of pop culture via Kiss and my heroes of the horrors.
Very
and,
cool.
And, I'm living the dream with this. It's a great ride. And my personality, I think, and my energy and my tenacious and aggressive style for this character, you know, the intensity suits Leatherface very well, and I think together,
sure.
You know, that's it's a real fun part of it. All the entrepreneurial aspects of, like, coming to the fans and doing, you know, meet and greets and handshakes and, you know, hearing people say nice things about my work, that comes to me more because of the horror and the sci-fi stuff. A lot of fans from the episode I did of Firefly, too, with Josh Whedon.
Sure.
So, you know, I like the cult stuff. It's great to be loved by people with a lot of passion and definitely a lot of color.
Now, did you catch any flack from the people that were big fans of the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre for doing the sequel?
They tried it, but we never changed the frame of that original film. And, you know, I love it, but we raised the bar with our ability as filmmakers
no
and
doubt.
Our passion for what they inspired with us, and you remember the greats that came before you.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, and that's the way you do it with respect. But it's a dated movie that could have used a polish, just like a great pair of shoes that sits in the closet needs to be dusted off.
No doubt. Now, what?
Big shoes to fill, but I have, you know, size 13 and a half feet.
Well, that's big feet to fill now. I don't know about anybody else redoing it.
I take fake murder and entertainment with a ridiculous dry sense of humor, so
good deal.
We suit each other well.
So what's going on? Now, there's all these rumors that there's a Freddy versus Leatherface or a Michael Myers versus Leatherface.
Oh, kick all their butts, man. You can bring them in on a slice and dice.
All right. That's what we like to hear. Do you know if there's any actual truth to that?
I'll kick Jason to the head. I don't know, but I'll be like Jean-Claude Van Damme and Double Take, you know, because I'm hoping to play Jason in the re-envisioning of the Friday 13th. Which is also being produced by Michael Bay's Platinum Dunes. It is also being directed by the director of this Texas Chainsaw movie, who I'm very much a fan of. I'm working with Jonathan Liebesman.
Oh, very cool. I didn't know they were, I knew they were rebooting Halloween. I didn't know they were rebooting.
I should have said that that's something I might be doing when you said, what else am I working on? So,
wow.
Although we don't have an agreement in place, it's something that I think I should be a private candidate for, especially when this movie does as well as it will. Knowing it's a very smart and really, really intelligent psychological ride that will just blow people's minds. I've heard people try to hate this movie and say, use my own quote, that this movie's so brilliant because it gives all the answers that you never knew, but you argue about with your friends. And everybody wants to know why he wears the mask. Everybody wants to know why he uses the chainsaw. Everybody wants to know why the heck he wears that tie. He's not. He didn't go learn to tie a double Windsor. that thing was cut. He never went to the office and punched a card and had to wear a tie, you know. No, that's not him, but
now that would make a hell of a prequel.
It's in there. This is the prequel. And it gives you it shows you that Leatherface was like a dog who's been beaten,
really?
Kicked in front of your own eyes so many times. If you can't save that dog, you want the dog to save itself.
Right.
And when the dog retaliates in self-defense, you're overjoyed. And hence is part of how the Leatherface comes in to the picture. And Thomas Hewitt becomes a monster from a man. And they say, wow, these idiots just don't get it. Now they've gone and ruined it. They should never be an answer and explanation. Well, you don't have to stop geeking out. You know what I mean? This is so smart. Everybody's going to be awestruck and caught up in this story because it's an amazing movie based on, you know, a story that we came up with, and the execution between the cast, Harley Ermey and I, and the way we work together and the way we know these characters, and I've enjoyed playing them so much, and the director just giving us free rein to bring everything we have to the table.
Awesome.
Well, we kick a lot of butt that way, and we're smart guys. We're just kicking our stuff and doing our job the best of our ability. But I'll tell you, that's the beauty of being creative and getting to work with such great people, because it grows in front of you and everybody works together and nobody takes credit. But I'm certainly very happy to be promoting this movie, and I encourage everybody to go see it if they like a kick-ass thrill ride and a great time with a story that grabs you, you know, since it's kind of like, I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, I love movies like Silence of the Lambs and all that stuff, Hannibal Lecter, and they really make you think, and then they blow you away. When this makes you, well, you'll witness things that'll blow you away, and then you just you won't believe it. It's just like, oh my God. Everybody's like, no, that really happened, and oh no, he did it like this because of this. And the truth of the matter is, when you see how it happened, it's an amazing movie that it pulls you right in, and it blows you away, and it gives you a feeling of satisfaction because we're giving you the answers, and it's a good thing.
Very cool.
Because it's very cool. Exactly. You see that, Dave? I knew this would go well.
Definitely. Well, Andrew, I want to thank you very much. I want to let you get back to your Megadeth concert. For those people that are interested in meeting Andrew, he's going to be here in Minneapolis next weekend for the, I think it's the 15th through the 17th at Crypticon Minneapolis. You can look that information up on the website. Darkness Radio is hosting an Andrew Benarski, the new Leatherface. He'll be there signing autographs, shaking hands, meeting and greeting with the fans. So you're going to want to stop in and say hi to him, tell him you heard him on the show as well. Andrew, thanks a lot for taking time out with us this evening while you're at the concert to talk to us and talk to the fan.
Bill Moseley kicks butt, and before he can tell you, he's in a great band with Buckethead called Cornbugs. I'm a big fan. I love him.
Very cool. Well, we're going to be talking to Bill next. Andrew, thank you very much for taking out time with us this evening.
Hey, listen, ready? I'm walking into a Megadeth right now, so I'll leave you with the sounds of Dave Mustaine.
Very cool. That's the way to go out.
Open the door for this radio show so you can hear a little bit of Megadeth.
Here we go. Ready?
All righty.
And that was the pilot to kick off this interview, Minneapolis.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andrew. Have a good one.
Good night, y'all.
Good night. Drive safe. You were listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. At least I think you are after that last half an hour. I'm not quite sure what show we're working on right now, but Andrew Benarski is a good guy. He'll be the new Leatherface in the prequel, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginnings. He was also in the last remake of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. We're going to cut to a quick commercial. When we come back, we're going to have the affable Mr. Bill Moseley on the line with us to talk to us about some more horror movie stories. Thanks a lot for tuning in. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll be back with more right after this.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I got to pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There's more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Come one, come all to the Circus of Terror, known as Crypticon, the greatest horror convention in Minneapolis. Ever wanted to look Captain Spaulding dead in the eye? Well, Sid Haig will be at Crypticon this year. Just don't look him in the eye, it drives him crazy. Bill Moseley will be there as well. Let's say your tastes run a bit on the freakish side. Well, step right up as Crypticon welcomes Mutt Berryman from the original Hills Have Eyes and Ken Foray from Dawn of the Dead and Devil's Rejects. If your tastes run a little bit to the softer side, we'll step right this way and meet Priscilla Barnes and Kira Show from the original Night of the Living Dead. And what Crypticon wouldn't be complete without Alex Vincent from Child's Play and John A. Russo, the author of the screenplay for the original Night of the Living Dead. And of course, the scariest attraction that you could think of would be there as well. What am I talking about? Well, it's Dave and Tim from Darkness on the Edge of Town. Crypticon takes place on September 15th through the 17th at the Medina Entertainment Center in Medina, Minnesota. Find out how to get your tickets by going to CrypticonMinneapolis.com. Go to Crypticon Minneapolis right now and get your tickets before they're gone.
Do you want to take charge of your life? We all have our demons we want to get rid of. This is Russ Clark. My Hypnosis CD series will help you take charge of your life and kick those demons out. Thousands of people have made personal improvements through the power of hypnosis. Your success is guaranteed by me, or I will refund 100% of your investment. To kick those demons or to add relaxation into your life, visit my website, www.powerhypnosis.net.
Mommy!
Is anyone there?
Leave me alone!
Do you have ghosts?
Do you have dreams?
Do you have an interest in the unknown? Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para Investigators, the 24/7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
You hear loud moans and banging on your walls. Next time, if you're in the hotel.
No more Yankee, my winky. The donga needs food.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with your hosts, Dave Schrader and Tim Dunn.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. This evening, we're taking a little bit of a different slant for the second hour of the show. We're talking to some of the professionals that you've seen and enjoyed in a lot of the different horror movies that have been going on in the last 10 years. We just talked to Andrew Benarski, who's the new Leatherface. On the line with us, we've got Mr. Bill Moseley. And Bill Moseley, for those of you that are in the know, is an actor, he's a writer, he's also a musician, and he's best known for his portrayals of the plate-headed Chop Top in Tobe Hooper's Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, also the evil Otis P. Driftwood in Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses, and Bill has appeared on HBO in the Mick Jackson movie Live from Baghdad and on 7 episodes of the hit series Carnival as Possum, the Carnival Cook. And just a really neat opportunity. I got to meet him last week out at Dragon Con, and he's going to be in town next week for Crypticon here in Minneapolis. So he was gracious enough to come on the air and spend some time with us this evening, talk a little bit about his career and about the movies. And Mr. Moseley, we welcome you, and thank you very much for joining us here in the Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Well, thanks very much, Dave. Thanks for having me on in the darkness.
Well, we appreciate you being here.
I can shed some light.
Definitely. Well, yeah, I think you should quite a bit. I was blown away last week. It's one of those kind of deals when I met you and you had the pictures out from all the movies that you'd been in. I didn't realize the name with the face. You're one of those guys that I've seen you in a bunch of different movies, loved different characters that you've done, and just didn't even piece it together. And of course, I don't mean that in any disrespect, but I knew of you from the House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects movie. But one of my favorite movies is The Night of the Living Dead and the remake that was done by Tom Savini. And I didn't even put two and two together that you played Johnny in the remake of that movie as well.
coming to get you, Barbara.
Very cool.
Horny. They've been dead a long time.
Now, you've been acting for quite a while. You've been in, like I said, you were in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, too. And I got to ask you, I posted on our website, and I wanted to know if they discussed this with you when they did the film shoot. The poster for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 is a dead knockoff of The Breakfast Club. Have you noticed that, or did you know that when you were doing the photograph?
Yes, we did. We okay. knew that. That was Kid Carson's idea, who co-wrote and, I guess, co-produced Chainsaw 2. His idea was to actually have us in The Breakfast Club post.
That's awesome. Everybody always thought I was high when I was talking to him. I'm like, no, man, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 poster, they look like they're in the Breakfast Club.
Absolutely. No, that was dead on intentional.
And that's your character, like I said, it blew me away because my favorite character, as we mentioned in the beginning of the show here, was Chop Top. I loved the character in there. You played it so perfect and over the top and with such insanity that I've never, I don't know, you actually creeped me out being that goofy in that movie. With the Sonny Bono wig and scratching at that metal plate with the lighter and the hanger. That was just one of the best roles. I'm blown away by all the stuff that you've done. And, you know, Carnival, of course, I love that show, so it was cool to see it pop up on there. But you've also, Andrew just plugged you, you've got a band out there as well, correct?
Yes, I do. It's called Corn Bugs, and it's a kind of a, it's like a floating crap game. It's it's me on vocals. And actually, I guess I played Duck Call a couple of times.
Very cool.
And then it's Buckethead.
Sure.
Is the master musician, mostly guitars. He also plays a little weird piano every once in a while and has strange samples of different sounds on his various electric machines.
And Buckethead, of course, is from the reimagining of Guns N' Roses band,
right.
Correct?
Right, Guns N' Roses. He's also played with Primus.
Mm-hmm.
Buckethead is, I mean, for my money, the greatest guitar player on the planet, so it's great that he's a Chop Top fan.
Very cool.
And we get along well. We have a fairly twisted imagination so that we end up, we get one another, and it's really a lot of fun to just crank it up and make up these songs as we go along.
And
also, our drummer is Pinch Face, who's a childhood friend of Buckethead and is from the Deli Creeps, Buckethead's original band. And then occasionally we're joined on Hammond organ by our producer, Travis Dickerson, from good old Chatsworth, California.
Now, you do have CDs that are available, and they can get them off your site as well, correct?
Yeah, they meaning you all, can come to Chop Top's Barbecue, choptopsbbq.com, and get all five of the Corn Bug CDs. And we also actually just put out a groovy DVD called Quackers.
Okay.
Which is very heavy into ducks and geese.
Yeah, I noticed that you do the duck call. So is that a simple fetish of yours, or what?
It's just something I've enjoyed over the years. I just somehow I think it all started when I was a boy, and my grandfather used to take me. He lived in Rye, New York, and he used to take me to the town park, and there was a little pond with a bunch of ducks, and we would go to the bakery in Rye and actually get stale rye bread. Where else but rye would you find
that's
that?
Right.
We would feed that to the ducks.
Now, you actually grew up in Barrington, Illinois, is the news I had.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm originally from Roselle, Illinois, myself.
All right.
Yep, so not too far down the road from it.
That's fantastic.
Now, I wanted to talk to you, because you've been in so many different movies, and, Night of the Living Dead, of course, was a remake of the original, and then you were in House of a Thousand Corpses, which, from interviews I've read and seen with you, you've even mentioned that it's kind of a nod to Texas Chainsaw Massacre with a little bit of the Marx Brothers thrown in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also was in Army of Darkness, which was
right.
unofficially Evil Dead 3.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Silent Night, Deadly Night 3. I've been in a bunch of, some originals, a lot of legacy movies, which actually is a lot of fun. I actually was also in the remake of The Blob. And Blob was the first scary movie I ever saw in my life.
Steve McQueen, wasn't it? The original?
Steve McQueen, that's
right. Right. Now, let me ask you real quickly, what are your thoughts? I mean, aside from it's good work and you're getting the jobs and all the remakes, but what are your thoughts with Hollywood today, with the spawning of reimagining or reworking? I mean, Andrew was just mentioning they're redoing the Friday the 13th franchise now. Rob Zombie, I guess, has signed on to do the new Halloween, according to the news that keeps leaking on the sites. Yeah. They've done remakes of Night of the Living Dead. Your buddy Sid Haig is, I guess, in a 3D version of Night of the Living Dead.
That's right.
You know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacres have been remade.
Hills Have Eyes.
Right, Hills Have Eyes.
I mean,
and any thoughts on why they keep spinning out the same stuff and not just coming? I mean, it's a year, you know, we're in the 21st century. I would guess there's got to be some new, cool, creepy stories out there.
Well, you'd think so, but I think that movies are so expensive to make that you really want to try to hedge your bets as much as possible.
So you just kind of...
I'm sure that it's easier to sell something that's already...
a proven...
A cult classic, sure, right? a proven entity than coming up with new stuff. You know, and for the most part, I'm more old school, although I did actually like the remake of Dawn of the Dead. I thought that was pretty cool.
So did I, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I think if they would have named it anything but Dawn of the Dead, it would have been great, except for everybody would have ripped it apart for being a ripoff of Dawn of the Dead.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a great, great flick. Now, when you did Night of the Living Dead, that was actually, that had the blessing of George Romero, correct?
Well, he wrote the screenplay, and he and George and then Russ Striner, who I think is also appearing at the Crypticon this next weekend.
That's right. He's the original Johnny. Yep.
And John Russo were the three producers of the remake. I think that they wanted to remake it. I think it was, the idea was that it wasn't that the original needed remaking as much as it was about
trying to recapture the copyright, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had lost the film, I guess.
Yeah, how sad is that? Did you hear that story? When it originally came out, I think it was called Night of the Flesh Eaters.
Right.
And they were asked to change the name, and they went in at the last minute, and they forgot with the placard at the beginning to put the little copyright signature on there. So George Romero actually lost the rights to the Night of the Living Dead series. So all the thousands of copies that have been made, he's really not making a penny off of any of the remakes. So when he redid the movie with, I think it was Tom Savini directed that one, correct?
Yes, he did.
So you worked with Savini in that, and that was to try to recapture the franchise and give him some copyright laws back into his own pocket, right?
Give him some retirement income.
Sure.
A residual income. So that was actually, and it was kind of interesting because, you know, certainly in George's reworking of the original,
right,
he ended up making Barbara, of course, kind of more like a Ripley in Aliens. So
yes, exactly.
Barbara came out of her shell and turned into this, commando.
Commando Barbie, yeah.
Yeah, which was actually really kind of cool. It was funny because I had worked with Savini. Of course, he was the makeup master on Chainsaw 2, and mm-hmm. So we were buddies from doing that. And then when he got the nod to direct the remake, he called me up and said, "Sending you a copy of the script. Pick any character. You're in my movie." And I went, "Oh, yeah, that's great."
So the
script arrived, and I read it. And of course, I'd seen the original 20 times, and so I wanted to be Harry, who was the guy guy in the basement, the guy that was always afraid and, was locking people out, just a despicable guy. But I figured that Harry probably had, the most scenes and therefore the most time and therefore, the part would make the most money.
Right.
So I said, I called Tom back and I said, "Hey, it's a great script. I want to be Harry." And he said, "Well, pick any part, just make sure it's Johnny." And I went,
"Excellent."
So then I went off because I needed to brush up on my Boris Karloff accent.
Sure.
I went out to my local video store and rented really a great movie that Boris did later in his career called Die, Monster, Die with Nick Adams. And I think that was actually a Lovecraft story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used that to study and ended up getting my Boris Karloff accent down.
Very cool.
Tried to get the tried to get the lisp and do it right. So when I would utter those, I mean that's heavy. You know, sometimes it's more daunting when someone has already blazed the trail, because then you have to utter famous lines and you better get them right, because they're coming to get you, Barbara. Some of the most famous lines in American cinema horror history. And to be handed that is, it's no small deal.
Now, let me ask you, because that begs kind of an interesting question, you know, talking about filling in the shoes of a classic. Now, Gus Van Sant redid Psycho with Vince Vaughn, and they did a shot-for-shot remake. I think they only changed a few little tweaks in it just to kind of bring it into the 21st century. But for the most part, it was a shot-for-shot remake and dialogue, and they used the original shooting script and all of Hitchcock's notes to redo this movie. Do you feel that doing a movie like that, as opposed to kind of George reimagining and changing the ending? See, I always thought what I liked most about the whole Night of the Living Dead was the starkness of it and the fact that, you know, you had the main hero going through this entire thing, and, you know, not that I'm against feminism and making the woman the tough guy and the Ripley of the movie, but I mean, it was a major change. Do you think that needed to be done for the movie just to keep it fresh, or?
Oh, I think it was an interesting way to do it. I remember it actually was funny because I did ask Tom if I could make a suggestion in terms of my death, and now you have this, you know, Barbara is now my sister has dropped her mousy exterior, and now she's this action hero, and what I wanted to do, different from the original, was to have Johnny come back, not necessarily in a mob of zombies, but somehow wandering in an open door, somehow coming in solo, and have a moment inside the house where Barbara comes into, say, the living room, and there is Johnny, and she recognizes me, and I'm toward her. And she is she's stopped in her tracks. She's no longer Ripley. She's Johnny's sister, and
right.
Intimidated, and oh my God, Johnny! And even though I'm dead, and she knows it, she can't. She's powerless, and I'm coming toward her. And then Tony Todd would come in and just kind of casually lop off my head with his machete.
Sure.
And my head would go bumping along the floor, and she'd go, Johnny. And my eyes would look up, and there would be that moment where no one was really sure if, in fact, I became human one more for another second, or if it was just a reflex. And I thought that would be an interesting way to end it. And I said that to Tom, and he said, well, that's great. We just don't have the budget. So that was it. So I ended up...
What kind of trooper are you that you wouldn't let him actually cut off your head?
They used my dummy, actually.
Okay.
the very last scene, Johnny does not come back because they didn't want to fly me back from California. They were a little cheap on the budget. So what they did instead was they took the dummy that took the fall on the gravestone.
Right.
And threw that in the back of a pickup truck. So at some point they pulled the canvas cover back, and there's Johnny, me, actually my dummy, with a bunch of other bodies. And so it wasn't really very dramatic after all.
Now, with all the movies that you've done and doing the remakes, or I should say doing like the House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects took a lot of heat because it wasn't so much a horror movie. It became kind of like a spaghetti western shootout.
Mm-hmm. A violent crime movie.
Right. It was more like that and, you know, more like the Japanese violent gang movie type things.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that that a change needs to be made in the horror movies, you know, to kind of bring both of these genres together in one? Or, I mean, do you think you can still get away with scaring people without needing to show all the violence and the gore?
I don't really, you know, have an opinion. I'd have to probably sit down and contemplate that over some, you know, Chinese runes. But actually, I thought that what Rob did with the Devil's Rejects was brilliant.
You know, right.
So far as he, of course, House of a Thousand Corpses, was an homage to a bunch of different movies, certainly Chainsaw and probably Motel Hell, and there
exactly.
was a bunch of different things thrown in there.
And I love the fact that he used all Marx Brothers names for the characters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But he was, you know, that was, I thought, okay, that's, you know, that's a, you know, it's a good, solid movie. It was a lot of fun to do. Loved working with Karen Black, you know, loved certainly working with Rob and Sherry and, you know, it was a lot of fun to do. We actually shot it in what was, in fact, the chicken ranch from the house from Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Oh, okay.
That was the House of a Thousand Corpses, and we were right in the back lot of Universal in Burbank, California, and we would have tram block because while we were shooting, I mean, literally a tram full of, camera-toting tourists would pass us every 7 minutes on the minute when the park was open. So it was so funny. We'd come out. I came out dressed in Mr. Willis's skin, covered with blood, long hair, crazy. And I'd step outside, and there would be a bunch of tourists snapping pictures. I'd wave, and you know the.
How about the kids like that, huh?
Oh, yeah, the guy in the.
Mommy,
the
where's King? What the hell is that?
Yeah, and on your right, Rob Zombie, House of a Thousand Corpses, and yeah, we'd wave and hold up severed heads, and I think the people got very excited.
Very cool.
But well, what he did with The Devil's Rejects was he was given a contract, I'm sure, to do a sequel. So he ended up doing so many wholesale changes that it was, and yet still it was the letter of the contract that it would be about the Fireflies and Otis Driftwood, that the, you know, the same characters would appear, you know, and so that there was definitely, you know, the story went from, you know, from House to Devil's Rejects, and yet it really was almost like he shifted genres. I mean, from a horror movie to a violent crime picture to kind of a grindhouse 70s feel. The characters all look different. Baby doesn't laugh anymore. I'm not an albino anymore. You know, my eyes go from brown and red to blue. I grow a beard. I become kind of sandy-haired and not, you know, again, not an albino. Captain Spaulding wipes the makeup off his face in the first, you know, 5 minutes of his appearance and then stays clown-free the rest of the movie. So it was very interesting, and I that's when I really appreciated Rob's I'm going to go as far as to say his genius. I just thought, and he really knew what he wanted. He really emerged, and for my money, as a you know, went from a good director to a great director. And
right, instead of just rehashing the first movie, right, coming out with something. Instead of just rehashing the first movie, yeah, which is what most horror movies do.
That's kind of that sequelitis. And I think he was actually loath to do a second one because he didn't want to get into that, you know, let's do, you know, like Evil Dead 2. I love Evil Dead 2, but it really is kind of a rehashing with a little bit bigger budget of Evil Dead.
Exactly, right.
A lot of times there are movies, especially in the horror genre, that if they are a winning formula, you know, people don't want to get too far away from that in a sequel.
Well,
the idea is if it makes 75% or 50 to 75% of the box office of the original, you know, we're still rolling in dough.
Well, Tim
and
I,
Rob bucked that trend, and I'm really proud of him for it.
Tim and I, my co-host and I, were kind of thinking we're going to put together the money. I think we're going to remake House of a Thousand Corpses next year, but we're going to have Richard Simmons play your role and Rip Taylor play the role of Captain Spaulding. What do you think about that reimagining?
No, I think that's, I don't know about Richard Simmons, but Rip Taylor I just met last week at Dragon Con.
Right. And I just think there'd be something less frightening about confetti.
I pulled out
confetti.
A $20 bill, and I got Rip's, you know, I got his autographed picture.
Sure.
and I knelt down behind the table there, you know, shoulder to shoulder with him, and got a nice picture.
See, now, but I'm just thinking that might be a totally different
Mickey
way to
Rooney's
take it.
Autograph.
You got who?
Mickey Rooney.
Oh, now, wasn't that kind of sad? He looked like he was so unhappy to be there.
Oh, he was great. I love Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, he was the number one star in 1956 or whatever, and, you know, the number one star in the world.
Right.
It was so great. He's there with his wife, who I guess is wife number 8, Jan, who obviously, you know, cares a lot about him. And he was there with his son, and I don't know if you saw his son, but he looked like a circus tough with, you know, he's a barrel-chested guy with sleeves of tattoos up both arms. And
I didn't know that was his son.
He might have had a gold ring in his ear. If he didn't, he could well have had one. And he was a, you know, it looked like a tough son of a gun, but
yeah.
He was a real nice guy.
Yeah, it was great to see Mickey Rooney.
Can I give you $20? I'd love to get Mickey's autograph. And he said, well, aren't you sitting across the aisle there? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, why don't you just give us a picture and we'll give you one.
Oh, very
I went
cool.
over and got a bloody picture of Otis. and I just wrote to Jan and Mickey, best wishes, Bill Moseley, Otis Driftwood, and handed it to them. And they were really happy with it. And they gave me a picture that said, you know, best wishes, Mickey Rooney.
Very cool. Yeah,
that was maybe the high point of that weekend.
I just thought it was kind of surreal to see Mickey Rooney sitting right next to George Romero.
It was.
It was just funny to see, but they both were. I mean, Mickey Rooney was very nice to everybody as I watched, but it just Some of the times you just look at him, and he was looking at all these people in Star Trek and Star Wars costumes, and you knew he just must have been thinking, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah.
I used to do Elizabeth Taylor. What am I doing here?
Yeah, that's right. He was married to Ava Gardner, for Christ's sake.
That's right. Yeah, they've been through them all. But
well, remember, it went Mickey Rooney, George Romero, and C-3PO.
Yes, Anthony Daniels. That's right.
Anthony Daniels, who would, and no matter how long his line for autographs was, he would stop at 4 p.m. and take his tea break like a good Englishman.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But
Anthony see-through pee-pee or C-3PO. Or yeah. I get it confused.
No, I thought,
apparently, I did hear one piece of scuttlebutt. Apparently, he and R2-D2 hate one another.
Oh, really?
Oh.
And if they're at a convention together, they insist that they be put on opposite ends of the hall.
Wow. Well, is that what you're
going to... I'm also buddies with Chewbacca, and Darth Vader was there. I mean, just, you know, how weird is that?
Now are you going to request never to be seated next to Richard Hatch again?
You must have... Did you witness that?
Yeah, it was you and I were talking when Richard Hatch melted down, so it was kind of... Richard Hatch from the old Battlestar Galactica, all of a sudden he just melted down and started yelling at his agent, and Bill was standing there talking to us. He was nice enough to deal with the fans, and all of a sudden Bill just turned around and went over and said... Hey, you know, some of us are trying to do business here. Why don't you take
it
elsewhere?
That's right.
So that was great.
That cooled him out more than sit down or I'll, you know, kick you down or, you know, any of that stuff.
Dude, you're Otis. You should have just pulled out the shotgun. Scared him right there.
Dude, I only have that one in the picture. I don't bring that with me.
The only thing
I bring with me is, is a leather man, and I could have done a lot of stuff to him with
that. That's right. Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight. And, again, you're going to be at Crypticon Minneapolis next weekend.
Well, you can come out and meet and greet. I sure am planning to. Now, I do start jury duty tomorrow.
Oh, no.
I'm supposed to be at the courthouse at 7:45 a.m. mañana. And I'm bringing down, actually, I printed out my appearance. I printed it offline from Crypticon to try to plead with him and say, look, I'm going to Crypticon. I can't be in a trial.
Just tell him you're a big fan of murder.
That's right. Maybe if you just sit there with the lighter scratching your head with the hanger, they'll let you out of it, Bill.
Exactly. Go, hey, they're all guilty. They should all hang.
That's right.
Well, I'll do it for you. You just send them to my place. I got a skill saw in the garage.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Bill. And again, everybody, you can join him at Crypticon Minneapolis next week. It was a pleasure having you on the show, sir. It was our pleasure talking to you, and I appreciate the time you took with us this evening.
Well, thank you very much. You know what I'll do is, come by Crypticon, and all you wonderful Minneapolisoids. What is it? What would it be? Minneapolisites?
That sounds good to me.
Minneapolisians. And I will give you some corn bugs. And I don't know if you play...
Yep.
We should infect your listeners.
Yeah, that'd be great. Bring them out.
Hey, good.
Well, thank you very much. You have a good night, Mr. Mosley.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you very much for tuning in. And remember, next week with us, we're going to have Lorraine Warren doing her first interview since the passing of her husband, Ed, and Marianne Winkowski, the real ghost whisperer, will be joining us. Thank you again. We look forward to talking to you next week.